Well, hello again, and welcome to another one of our Baird Bites. Been a little while since we did one, but today I'm delighted to be joined by Laura Bugor and Niamh Crotty, both of whom work for Lewis Silkin. Niamh is an employment lawyer working with our well-known colleagues, Vince Thomond and David Hopper, and Laura, she works in the property real estate end of the business. The reason we're talking to Laura and Niamh today is they've written a paper on the future of the office in the context of COVID-19 and the move towards remote working from home, télétravail, as my French friends would call it. And I thought it would be worth talking to them about how they see the future of the office and how they see, in fact, the future of work. As we potentially come out of COVID-19, if we can get the vaccine, whenever we can. So, Laura, Niamh, welcome. And so, tell us, how do you see the future of the office? Do you see it having a future, or do you see the office as such disappearing? And what's going to happen to all that space a little bit down the road? So, whichever of you want to start.
Well, I think we really it remains quite an uncertain picture at the moment. Obviously, the office world has been turned on its head in the last year, with most of the workforce or office workforce working from home, and it's difficult to see at the moment where and how and when a sort of large scale return, with everybody going back to the office is actually going to happen. And potentially that's even, we think, slightly more uncertain than it was when we first started researching our article last autumn. Lots of people are now used to being at home, been at home nearly 12 months now, working from home, and actually the thought of going back to a commuting routine potentially could be, quite tricky. And also, if, there's been lots of commentary how people think that a hybrid way of working, sort of some days in the office, some days at home, particularly in the sort of short to medium term, but might be the way things are going. Actually, that could be quite tricky for people to adjust to, where you don't have a regular routine and you're in one day and you're not in the next. And similarly, it's also very difficult because of that for businesses to make any big decisions at the moment. I think sort of most companies are sort of holding their breath as long as they can before they have to make any decisions, really. But equally at the same time, which is also what we touched on in our article, we think it's also a positive time. Actually, it could be a time for transformation and for making, embracing the things that have worked well in the last 12 months, but also with when the restrictions ease, that you can try and address the issues that have arisen as well.
Okay.
Yeah, and just to add, I definitely agree with Laura. I think that probably remote working isn't going anywhere anytime soon, and it undoubtedly will be present in the way we work in the future in some shape or form. The debate, I guess, is still ongoing about what kind of shape that will take. But what I do think is quite interesting is how employees who are and categories of employees who are originally leading the debate were, in favour of remote working pre-COVID, such as generally like millennials, Generation Z, and usually more often than not women, they're not actually the ones who are faring the best when it comes to home working during the pandemic. And it's actually the baby boomer generations and Generation X. So that tends to be, I think, those born between the 50s and the 70s. They're the people who are actually finding they're getting the most advantages from working from home at the moment. And they're the most in favour of continued remote working, which is certainly wasn't the case before the pandemic. And I think it's because that baby boomer generation tend to be the decision maker in many organisations, it does seem likely that home working, is going to play a key part of the office of the future. But I think what I find most interesting is kind of looking into those contrasting experiences, I guess, of home working in terms of both positives and negatives of the different types of individual employees. And, there's definitely not going to be a one size fits all approach. And I think that that's going to be a real challenge for employers who ultimately are going to need to take into account a wide range of different and sometimes competing interests and circumstances when they are making decisions ultimately about how the future of their office will look. So I think employee engagement is going to be really, really, really important in that regard.
Let me stay with the property aspect for the moment. You talked about that those who are driving this debate. Now, I can never understand the difference between Generation X and baby boomers and all that sort of stuff. You know, I'm just an old guy, right? But because I'm an old guy, I own my own house. My kids are grown up and gone. I have plenty of space. I mean, now I've been working from home for years and years before all of this stuff started. As I once said to somebody recently, I started working from home before the fax was even invented. And that's some long time ago. But look, you know, more realistically, I'm an old guy. My kids are gone. I have a house. I have plenty of space. I think what you're saying to me is that, yeah, that's great working from home if you have a big house or an apartment and plenty of space and you can work in one room, your partner can work in another room and you're not fighting over the kitchen table or whatever, right? Is that the issue here?
Yeah, I definitely think, you know, remote working has kind of highlighted an age divide as well as a kind of socioeconomic divide, which is often quite visible from, you know, when you're having Zoom or Microsoft Teams meetings and you get a little bit of an insight into your colleagues' working spaces. And definitely, I think that's a reason why the baby boomer generation are getting more advantages from working from home. I think certainly their working spaces tend to be more comfortable, and also they tend to not be the ones who are maybe looking after young children, while there's a lot more millennials in that position. So definitely, as I said, while I think millennials would have been the generation that are kind of, you know, favouring home working pre-COVID, they are finding that, or they're more commonly finding that they don't have adequate or suitable workspaces. And oftentimes they are working from bedrooms in shared apartments or maybe kitchen tables shared with other individuals. And, you know, possibly, I guess then unsurprisingly, they're also more likely to be suffering from stress and anxiety and other issues with communicating with colleagues, which definitely is exacerbated probably by their working environments. Again, if they are working from small and cramped spaces. So again, looking at, you know, those employees in those circumstances, they are going to be more likely to want to return to the office at some point in comparison to those who do have more comfortable, you know, home offices and just bigger spaces to work from and move around. Definitely, I think that's definitely a big factor in whether home working will or won't work for different categories of people.
Yeah, I think also
go ahead, Laura, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that I think there's also a distinction clearly between working from home in a pandemic and working from home in what is hopefully going to be more normal times. And if a hybrid model, you know, does take off, then the current pressures that are on some, you know, with the children at home, with the restrictions on where you can go and when you can go, you know, sort of hopefully some of the pressure. So not having a suitable workspace at home, maybe because you've got children at home and you're trying to homeschool them, you know, when the schools open back up, that hopefully that pressure will be eased and it would be slightly easier. And likewise, you know, there might be sort of more local facilities, that you could go and use instead. So, you know, sort of third spaces, so not at home, not in the sort of traditional office, but in a sort of co-working space might be open that would, you know, alleviate some of the issues of not having a proper home working situation might cause. So
what you're suggesting there, I think, is that if we can draw a distinction between working from home and remote working. You mentioned earlier the end of the commute, and I think we're seeing the end of the commute. Who wants to, you know, spend 2 hours a day traipsing in and out of city centres? But you know, not every home is suitable for working from home on a sustained basis. So maybe people are going to go down, we're going to see the re-emergence of the internet cafe or the shared working spaces and so on. But doesn't that create problems as well? How do you conduct confidential businesses? You don't know who's sitting next to you, you know?
No, exactly. Yeah, I think that is definitely an issue. I mean, there's been talk, for example, of a, you know, some businesses might adopt a hub and spoke model where they've got essential, particularly, you know, bigger businesses and then sort of smaller satellite offices around the country, which sounds very interesting. Whether or not that will happen in practice for anyone other than really big companies, but you could see that could help alleviate the issue of not having a proper working space, but you also don't want to do the commute. So something, if you're able to go to an office that's much more local to you, and also have the benefit of mixing with colleagues. But I think it remains to be seen whether or not those models can work in practice. So whilst, you know, it might be that you have lower rents and lower overheads because you've got smaller sort of, you know, not city centre based offices, you will have the logistics of that, of actually operating from a number of different sites across the country, could be tricky for businesses other than those that are, you know, large enough to cope. Whether or not that will actually be used in practice. I mean, instead, I think perhaps you touched on more use of an internet type cafe, you know, co-working, more open space. But as you said, there, it's not really suitable for particularly those in sort of professional industries where you might be working on sensitive matters that, you know, that has to be done really in a sort of in a closed space. So while I think there will be alternative ways, so for example, like the hub and spoke and, use sort of the co-working, sort of using maybe hotels or big department stores, opening those up to sort of enable people to do some work from those might be used more. I don't think it'll be a big part of the equation, personally.
Okay. What would you see, Niamh, as the sort of employment issues around sort of remote working? Is there a possibility, for instance, if, let me take an example. You're Irish, right? So you decide to leave Dublin and go and work in somewhere in Galway, right? Mm-hmm. So how do I, as your employer, know that your workplace is suitable, you know, from health and safety standards, you know, data protection, security standards and so on? And the answer to that is probably I don't, because I can't inspect thousands of workplaces, individual workplaces, right? So I decide, hey, you know what? I'm going to make you a contractor. I'm going to make you self-employed. Is that a risk?
Well, I think that definitely health and safety is a big issue with remote working, for kind of the reasons you've just said. So just, you know, brief summary that in, you know, the UK and Ireland, employers do have a responsibility to provide a safe place of work for employees. And obviously if that extends to remote working, or remote work environment, so your home office or whatever. So if employees aren't working in suitable environments with suitable equipment, and as a result of which they're suffering from injuries like back issues, that type of thing, you know, employers may be subject to health and safety claims. And, you know, the way I suppose an employer would carry out an inspection or would ensure that their place of work is safe would be by carrying out a risk assessment of their workstation and asking the employees, you know, is there any equipment that they're missing and that they need, and kind of putting the responsibility a little bit back on the employee. Now, there has been recent update, well, it's not that recent now, but of guidance from the Health and Safety Authority, which does provide that a competent person has to carry out that risk assessment. So potentially employees carrying out their own self-assessment of their workstations actually isn't sufficient. But I agree with you, in practice, that is pretty tricky to try to be carrying out those assessments of all workstations. And I think another issue is that, you know, even if you identify that a workstation is unsuitable, say if we go back to the concept of someone working from their bedroom or sharing a kitchen table or something, and you know, you're, as an employer, you're saying, well, we'll send you out, you know, suitable display screen, or, you know, we'll subsidize you purchasing a ergonomic kind of chair. That's not a lot of use where someone just doesn't have the space to fit that. So where does the responsibility stop then? You know, an employer is hardly going to be, are they going to be responsible for paying a higher rent so that you've more space to work from? It, you know, that doesn't seem very reasonable, but it definitely, you know, throws up all these issues. And then again, I think, you know, we can't forget about the mental health issues as well, that have been linked to prolonged periods of working from home. You know, I guess people, it's been shown that people, when they are working from home, they tend to be subject to longer working hours, finding it harder to switch off, and, you know, lines are becoming more blurred between home and work life. So employers also have a responsibility towards their, to ensure the mental well-being as well as the physical well-being of their employees. I think, you know, this is something that is on the government agenda, and I'm sure you're aware that there, you know, the government is proposing a code of practice on this right to disconnect, and also a national strategy for remote working, which that's a conversation for another day, but hopefully will provide some guidance to employers on how to deal with this, these types of issues. I think definitely one of the key things that we are advising our clients is that they should have a remote working policy in place, which kind of deals with all of those aspects such as health and safety, also confidentiality, data protection, reminding employees that working from home, they need to treat it as if they're working from the office, that all their obligations around, say, confidentiality of employer information, that extends to your working from your home office. And it's just really important to make sure employees maybe are adequately trained on these kind of topics so that they're aware and mindful of these issues. I think in terms of, you know, contractual changes or employees being engaged on different types of contracts, as you suggest, such as like a self-employed contractor. I mean, that's definitely not an easy thing to do. And at the end of the day, when the question is asked whether someone is a self-employed contractor or an employee, it doesn't matter what's written down in a contract is important. Really, what will be examined is how that relationship works in practice, and if in reality that person is still your employee and they're still under your control and supervision, then it's likely that they're going to be an employee irrespective of the contract of employment, or the contract of an independent contractor agreement that they're on. And I think, you know, ultimately you need the employee's consent to put them on to a different contract, and to change their terms of and conditions of employment. So I think it's probably not as easy to do as maybe people think. So there's definitely a lot of different issues at play when it comes to employers' responsibilities for the remote worker, I think.
I mean, you touched on something there that I want to ask you about, because, you know, and I've got to put this to Laura. Employers potentially stand to save millions of euros. I'm a European, not a Brexiteer, right? So I'll use euros. They stand to save millions of euros on office space in expensive downtown locations. Now, there may be short-term leasing contracts and stuff like that, but in the long term, they stand to save millions. Should there be an obligation on employers to give some of those millions of savings to employees to allow them to upgrade their homes so that they can work from home? What would you think of that? Hey, you know, like, hey, boss, you know, you've just saved 10 million by cancelling that contract down in Canary Wharf, and I'm living in this little, you know, shack. Couldn't you give me a few bob to help me with my mortgage to move to a bigger house outside of London? Is that something that's going to come onto the agenda?
Well, I suppose it's quite difficult to tell, really. I mean, I think it's understandable that, you know, companies would look to reduce office space and overhead costs, as you suggested, if the hybrid way of working is, you know, adopted, you know, across the board quite widely. And, you know, employees are either asking to or encouraged to just come in 2 or 3 days a week. Of course, you would look to think, well, we don't need as much office space. But I think whilst it will have an impact on the office market, I think in terms of both in terms of space, I think it's also the type of offices. You know, if you're asking people to come in and to commute in, it's going to change I think the office experience in terms of, you know, what you can offer, what that space will be used for, collaboration. And, you know, businesses are still going to need, you know, space. Even if you were to take some desks out, you still potentially will have a significant office footprint. You still need the same logistics, the same print rooms, and you might need room for the same specialist equipment.
The question I'm really asking you is this, if I, as an employee, now the emergency, the last year is one thing, forget about that, that's an emergency, we all had to do what we had to do, outside of our control. But if I, as an employer, a substantial employer, I make a decision that my employment model is going to involve you working from home 2 or 3 days a week and coming into the office, do I have a responsibility for your working space? And I don't just mean the logistics of an ergonomical chair and all that sort of stuff. But I mean, if I'm expecting you, look, because if you came into the office 5 days a week, I'd have to pay for that office space for you to work from. So why should I not have to pay some way or other from the office space you work for if you're working from home?
I think that's really like an interesting question, and I actually haven't thought of that before, because interestingly, what we've seen is actually employers suggesting that they will, should they be entitled to lower salaries, because the reason why they pay, say, London City salaries is because of the cost of living in London and maybe cost of commuting into offices. So if you have less of a cost to commute, as an employee, or you know, you're not paying the high London rent, well, therefore, why should we have to?
But if I'm working for you 3 days a week from my bedroom, should you be renting my bedroom from me?
I can see the argument. I don't know that employers will be willing to take on that responsibility. I think certainly it could become, you know, part of the recruitment or talent acquisition, are, you know, their range of benefits that employers use to, you know, before maybe you were luring, you know, the likes of Google and Twitter and lots of the tech companies were luring new talent in by their fancy snazzy offices. So maybe now they'll be offering subsidies for home working that will be, you know, better than the others. And that's what people will be looking out for when they're trying to make a decision about where they want to be employed. So maybe it'll be used in that kind of way in terms of the actual, you know, legal responsibilities. As I said, there definitely is a responsibility from a health and safety perspective, but I'm not sure how far, you know,
I'm willing to rent you my bedroom. If you want me to work for you, I'll quite happily, you know what I mean? Because you're saving zillions on downtown London or downtown San Francisco or whatever it is. Hey, come on, you know, give me a subsidy to move to a bigger house.
I think it will depend on how widely, you know, we've yet to see, you know, there's lots of talk. The suggestion is that there is going to be a sort of element of home working permanently. I guess it depends on whether or not, you know, what a company's stance is on that. If there's a suggestion that you need to work from home 2 or 3 days a week, well, that's quite a significant permanent change. So it might be that those sorts of conversations then do come to be part, as Niamh suggested, as part of the norm and part of an employment package. But if I think it's a difference, if you're asking or you're choosing to do that because you found that suited you, then obviously that's a different thing.
So look, Laura, you're the property expert, right? So yeah, let's assume that we do move to a hybrid model, 2 days in the office, 3 days at home, or whatever, right? What's going to happen to all that empty office space, do you think? Hell, you know, I mean, obviously, like, once you know, one French company has told me that, for instance, they are now planning on the basis of 0.6% per employee. So in other words, they'll only have enough space for people coming into the office 3 days a week, which means people. So that obviously means a big chunk of space. And they've said to me, we see huge real estate savings here. Okay? So what's going to happen to all that empty office space? What do you think is going to happen to it?
I mean, it's tricky to tell, I think, sort of, as I mentioned before, about how much of a reduction in office space there will actually be. And well, it might be that it's a change to the office that we know rather than a sort of offices, you know, the death of the office, as it were, in terms of using that space differently and in terms of encouraging people to come into the office and using it much more focus on wellness and air and light and outside space. So it might be that office footprints don't in practice reduce as significantly as people might think they will do. And also, you know, things, for example, it might be that some businesses will unfortunately probably not survive the pandemic. It might be that also some businesses have done very well and thrived and will look to grow. So I think, but, you know, it does seem that there may be a, in particularly the long term, maybe an overall long term reduction in office footprint, at which point some developers, you know, we'll probably look to utilize some of the relaxation in the planning laws, potentially used for different uses and more residential offerings, perhaps in the city centre. But I think it's probably a little bit too early to tell exactly what will happen. But it might be that there's a shift. But I personally don't see it as being a huge shift.
Yeah, let me ask you both a question. You both work for Lewis Silkin. I know Lewis Silkin's office in Chancery Lane. I've been there many times. You're not there at the moment. I think you're in Dublin, if I'm not mistaken.
I am, yes.
Yeah. And I'm not sure where you are, Laura, right? But look, would you consider, for instance, let me take Dublin. Would you consider, for instance, moving to the west of Ireland or to, I'm not going to suggest that anybody should ever move to Cork, right? But like, would you consider moving to Galway or to somewhere in rural Ireland and working from there, subject to broadband connectivity and all that sort of stuff? And would you consider, Laura, moving to, say, the north of England or something like that, and for the future? Mm-hmm. Because you know, we read reports that companies are moving out of Silicon Valley and saying to people, you can go to, you know, Wisconsin, or you can go to Nebraska, or you can go to wherever. You know, do you see your future in Dublin or London, is what I'm asking you.
I mean, I think it depends on how much the hybrid model, you know, sort of post-pandemic, actually, you know, what happens to your employment terms. Are you expected to go back to the office? Is this a short-term you know, working from home? Because, you know, unless the companies are going to be giving up their leases in, you know, big city centres, then there is probably an expectation that you will need to go and commute in at least 2 or 3 days a week. So living in the north of England, if the office is in London, perhaps isn't going to work. I think it will depend on the company you work for, your individual circumstances. But as we've touched on before, clearly you can get to sort of more house space for your money the further you move out of city centres. So it is a very difficult scenario, challenge between if you're going to be needing the space to work from home 2 or 3 days a week, but you also need to be within commuting distance of the office, then that is also a challenge, you know, as to how.
Just to add, I guess, you know, when we've been looking at kind of incorporating this sort of hybrid model into contracts of employment and place of work clauses, often employers are looking to retain some sort of discretion about requiring when they can require you to come into the office. For example, if there is some sort of meeting or something that you need to be near the office, so they don't want necessarily their employees, you know, in certain circumstances, maybe there are organizations who are agreeing to this, but I think employees shouldn't kind of get ahead of themselves either, giving up their leases and making these big moves at this stage when they don't, as Laura said, they don't know what model their organization is going to adopt. And there may be inbuilt into their contracts requirements that they are a commutable distance to the office in the event that they need to be called in at a time, maybe not in accordance with their schedule of days that they're expected into the office. So they're definitely, I think, I agree with Laura. It certainly, I think, is too early days to be deciding whether to move to the west of Ireland at this point. But it all kind of remains to be seen, I think.
I was more thinking of you moving to Barcelona and just popping up and down once a week on one of those 15 euro Ryanair flights, you know. Which I think, by the way, I think I see stuff about some companies are actually saying that that's the way they think their employees can work for the future. So look, there are plenty of other issues we could have talked about, and you know, your paper is fascinating and it's well worth a read. And I hope you guys continue to work in this area and to put more stuff out there, because I genuinely think that we're at a point of a significant change in the way we're going to work in the future. And as you both rightly say, there are more questions than answers at the moment. And at least, you know, the two of you have started to provide some answers or to put some stuff out there for people to think about. And I hope you continue to do that. I suspect I may come back and talk to you again a little bit later this year when, you know, we see the way we begin to come out of COVID-19 and as people get the vaccine and we begin to see the way the world reshapes itself. And but for the moment, shall I thank you both for taking the time to talk to me. Really appreciate it. Plenty to think about, you know, as we try to look at how do we structure the world of work in the future. So appreciate your time. Thank you both.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you.